of the crop.
Welcome to the 86th edition of the Gooner Podcast, recorded on the Monday evening after the defeat of Haitstown at Tottenham Spurs. The podcast is sponsored by GoonerShirts.com, the best website for all your Arsenal t-shirts. I'm your host, Mark Collington, and I'm continuing the panel from the podcast just done. Although we have had a switch in the lineup with Gooner publisher and original editor, how exciting is this, Mike Francis, joining Steve Ashford and Don Sebastiano. So welcome, Mike.
Thank you, Mark.
Now,
it's not that exciting for you, but...
Do you know what it is? I've never done a podcast for you. It's a seminal moment in my life.
And I remember seeing you standing on the corner of Gillespie Road and with nothing but a little Mac and a tarded bit of A5 paper called the Gooner.
Those were the good days.
A wee lad.
Well, let's
save
the reminiscing.
That bit of paper.
What's he doing there? What is that he's selling? That's not the programme. Who's he?
Well, he's here tonight and he's bigger and larger than not even
back then, yeah.
And he predates computers.
I know, it's phenomenal. But look, you out there in podcast land have been sending your emails left, right and centre. And I've got a panel to read one each, so this bit is called Viewer's Corner. So over to you, Pasty, to read the first email from our loyal listeners.
Which is entitled Speaking Volume.
That's just me about my topics.
Oh, is it? All right, okay. This is from notes. Russ Morgan, who says, firstly, I'd like to say thank... No, he doesn't say that. He'd like to say, I think your podcast is great, thoughtful comment and great Q&As with your guys.
Thanks.
Hang on a minute.
I'll say thank you to Russ.
Oh, thanks, yeah. Russ.
Yeah.
Right, okay. The only thing that dampens it for me is the fact that sometimes I have a hard time of hearing some of the chaps speaking their minds. When I'm out near Rhodes or on the tube, When I'm out near Rhodes or on the tube, I have a lot of difficulties listening when my iPod is at full blast. Well, if iPod's at full blast now, the last thing you say is, hope I haven't offended you in any way, and I look forward to the next instalment.
Well, thank you, Russ, for your correspondence.
I don't think he quite answered his question, though.
No, but he could hear that, though, couldn't he?
So he's probably talking about the dated equipment we used to record.
Yeah, just so, Russ, your comments
the
have been taken.
The fact that it's under a 1970 Sanyo cassette recorder would probably explain the fact that it goes a bit dark every now and again.
Well, there you go. Well, it could have been a Nagra.
We will try and get you an up-to-date digital recorder in future.
Yes, Russ, so sorry about that. Mike, over to you. What's your correspondence today?
Okay, hopefully I'm not going to have to shout this one. This one's from Chris Murray. It was received back in mid-August, so before things got as bad as they are now. Chris asks, why is it that we are still showing interest in a bucket load of French players? It seems all our recent signings are reported interest to players from League One. Is this because Arsene doesn't feel he can attract players from elsewhere? Does he now only have the respect of French affiliated players? For many years now, I've been saying we need to invest in experienced players. Any British team that has had any domestic European success has built their starting 11 around the spine of British players. I believe our weak underbelly is simply a lack of British bulldog spirit that fight, grit and determination to get a result in the middle of February on a waterlogged pitch away to Stoke in the snow. What are your thoughts on this? Am I completely wrong in my assessment or do you agree? We should bring in 2 to 3 experienced British players to create a solid British spine to our team.
Here, here.
What do you think, panellists?
Definitely. Well said, Chris, because absolutely right. That's exactly what we need.
After that email was sent, we actually did sign a core of British players, didn't we? If you include
Oxlade Chamberlain,
Yossi Benningou,
Arteta is as British as you can possibly get.
Mertesacker is practically Tony Adams.
Jenkinson,
is he finished?
Yeah, he's finished.
He's kind of half, I suppose so. Yeah,
he's not finished yet.
Where are the British players?
Let's put it this way. I mean, if you remember the time when we had Adams, and then you had Righty up front, and then you had
Ray Parler.
Had that spine. You had Parler, Merson. Hang on, who else did we have? Well, we had the 3 degrees, of course.
Frimpong.
It's true to an extent, but we need British spirit. That doesn't necessarily mean need British players. Patrick Vieira wasn't British. No, he played with the right attitude.
Yeah.
Who would we have gone and bought? Would we really have gone and bought Gary Cahill in the summer?
Yes, I'd love to have had him.
According to Kev, we were going to buy.
Which still gets mentioned now on the website regularly.
Chamberlain, Yossi Benayoun and Mertesacker do have what I would consider a bit of fight in them.
But they've played in the Premier League, which helps.
Yeah, they've got
some Premier League experience, so that makes a change.
Arteta's played in the Premier League. Benayoun's played in the Premier League. You know, they're reasonably good players.
Yeah.
Scott Parker would have been a good signing.
I have to say, what we've been saying earlier about, you know, Wenger's kind of faults and stuff, you have to say that losing Nasri and Fabregas was a blow, huge blow. But to lose Wilshere immediately afterwards for the best part of the season was desperately unlucky for both Wenger and us. And then to use Vermaelen for almost a second season running. And now to lose Sagna, I mean, as if a lack of coaching ability and a lack of tactical ability wasn't bad enough, he's now getting all these bloody injuries.
Yeah, that really does address Chris Murray's point about buying British, but thanks for that, Steve.
I've never heard him called Sagna before. And not only that, by the way, it's going to be Tottenham's revenge on the lasagna.
I've never heard Oxlade Chamberlain referred to as Oxlada Chamberlain.
We're thinking about lasagna.
Before we get into a chat about the English language and linguistics, over to you, Steve, for your email and the last one of today's podcast.
Right, this one is from Jeremy Cunnington. Rather nice name for a bird called Katie. Anyway, received August the 18th on our podcasts with journalists John Cross and Jeremy Wilson, plus the AST's Stan Kroenke. Is that right?
Tim can't Stubble. Be right, sure.
Right. Arsenal
Tim
Stubble,
never
had money
Tim.
To spend, but we
Tim Payton, sorry. Thanks, Mike. Sorry, Steve, go ahead. Yeah.
Right. Arsenal have never had money to spend, but we competed, thanks to Wenger's genius, by buying one or two experienced, if not fully rounded players, to augment a team for relatively small sums and winning titles. It took him 3 years to rebuild the 98 team using this method, but it worked. Yet, for what can only be for doctrinal reasons, i.e. to develop a team organically, that he abandoned that very successful strategy. In addition, your pundits make a valid point about our egalitarian wage structure, yet it is Wenger who sets it out, rewarding talented individuals who have yet to achieve anything, thus also probably adding to the complacency amongst them, as well as making them hard to shift when they don't make it. Do Manchester United have such an egalitarian one? Rooney may be on 180k a week, but squad players such as Fabio and Flavio would probably only be on around 30k a week. Good point.
I kind of switched off halfway through, sorry.
I know. Go back to school, Jeremy. Learn some grammar. But I like your sister.
Any comments to add to Jeremy's email, Michael Bastin?
I think it is a good point about the wage structure. I mean, people on the website recently have been continually going on about how we can't possibly compete with the likes of Man United, Man City and Chelsea because they throw so much money at it. And maybe that's a fair comment, but we're still the fourth highest wage payers in the country. Fourth or fifth now, I think it maybe is. But, we're 15th in the league and Newcastle are fourth. This whole idea of having a smooth line in the wage structure so that you haven't got players earning four, five, or six times the amount of others is just been proven to be wrong. And until Wenger changes that, or is made to change it by the board, we're stuck with it. And that's why we're still paying, presumably, we don't know for sure, but presumably we're paying the wages of players that are not at the club this season or out on loan.
Very good point. Very good points indeed. Well, thank you all for your emails. Don't forget, you can email us at goonapodcast@gmail.com should you want your emails read out and assassinated by the panel.
Did we only get three?
We got more than three, but if we'd be here forever, wouldn't we, if we did every single one?
Oh, I like doing that. That was good.
Well, good.
We should have an email special.
There'll be more next time. But Steve, I want to hear more from you.
Right.
Because you're not often here.
No.
So I want to get your take upon issue things. So let's start with another, what I call, hot topic. And let's go to the contracts. Van Persie, Walcott, Song, Tommy V have 1 year left to go on their contracts next summer.
Yeah.
Who of them will sign again? And I guess who do you want to sign again? But do you think they actually will? Oh, well, I guess the question is Van Persie, really.
God, what a question. Unbelievable. Well, I would say that I don't think we would have lost Fabregas and Nasri if we'd have invested in the team 2 or 3 years ago. I think when we had a fantastic backbone in the team and we needed three world-class players to turn us into Champions League winners, title winners, the lot. Everyone said we needed a defensive midfielder, a centre-half and a world-class striker. You know, none of those players were signed. Fabregas ended up playing next to Danielson. Nasri ended up playing next to Aboué, and God knows who else. Those players lost interest, knew we'd never win a title and walked and left. Now, the players that are going to sign next year...
So it wasn't just money with Man City,
no? It wasn't just money at all. Obviously, Nasri, money didn't help.
No.
But I honestly believe Nasri would have a better chance of staying if he had world-class players around him. But we just don't invest in the team. You said earlier on in the last podcast, or I think Mike said, that we spend initially 1 million a year on transfers, if that. And that's if we don't make a profit. So these players, they want to win trophies. You know, Van Persie's been here for like 8 years. He wants to win trophies. He wants to go to Barcelona, Man City, Man United. And who can blame him? Because he's not going to win sod all here. He's going to be fighting relegation if he stays here. And the same with Walcott and the same with everyone else. The only way to get these players to stay is to spend a shitload of money in January, buy some world-class players, and show them that we're really serious about winning trophies.
Mike, anything more positive to add to that, or do you agree with Steve's take on events?
Try and be vaguely positive. We'll start with Van Persie then, shall we? So yeah. He's got no chance of signing new contracts.
Do you think?
I can't see it, because for a lot of the reasons that Steve said. Why, if you were in his shoes, would you? And you know, any sensible player would kind of say no. I think the other ones, what we've got, Walcott, Song and Vermaelen,
yeah.
I think we've got a chance of all those staying, because they're on such good wages, or they're on reasonably decent wages relative to their ability, and in Vermaelen's case, injury record over the past 18 months, that they probably haven't got a chance of getting that sort of money elsewhere. So hopefully they will stay, but unfortunately the one that we really want to stay probably be on his bike.
It's just occurred to me that
because
I've thought the whole summer, I was thinking, why doesn't Wenger say to Cesc and to Nasri, listen, I'm going to go and get 6 world-class players, I'm going to do this, boom, 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 we're going to build this squad up, and it's just occurred to me now, he probably did, and he was probably saying, we're going to get Arteta, and we're going to get Mertesacker, and we're going to get this, and we're going to get that. No, and he probably said, look, don't worry, and gave it all that, but we're waiting until the 11th hour, just be, you know, for a bit of financial jiggery pokery or whatever.
Those players only came in after we lost 8-2 to Man United.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have come in if we'd got a result at Old Trafford.
And that we knew about the injuries to Vermaelen and Wilshere. Yeah.
So it's no surprise that they left. And as for Van Persie, you know, if I was Van Persie, you know, what would I do? If, you know, someone like a big team, we are not a big club at the moment. We're not.
Look at us on the pitch. We don't act like a big club.
We're not acting like a big club. We're acting like a fucking Bolton. See, you know.
Absolutely.
Have we ever acted like a big club?
Yes.
We all like to think as Arsenal fans that we are a big club, but have we ever gone out there?
When David Dean was heading up the club.
Dennis Bergkamp aside, have we ever signed what I call proper true world-class players?
When Thierry Henry...
But he was unproven, in a bad season, hadn't he?
When Thierry Henry was in front of goal, it all went wrong. Because say about Newcastle and everything, it all started going downhill in Paris. I was behind that goal. Henry was there. That fucking ball had gone in the back of the net and we'd have been Barcelona.
But it didn't
anything could have happened. No, it didn't. And from that point on, we have just gone from... weakness to weakness.
We were an achieving team.
And that was a great side. That side should have won the Champions League. But should have is not a word, not an expression you can use in football. No. But as far as also to answer your question, Song and you know, so, to be honest with you, Song has surprised me and become a decent player. And I think with a player like Fabregas next to him, you know, and he's matured no end. I'd be happy to keep Song in the side. Although he needs some help. I mean, you know, he's got this kind of slightly like one eye's half shut kind of thing about him. But it doesn't matter, because I think he's turned into a class player. Walcott has, I'm afraid, has not lived up to his promise. And he has some puffs, but he doesn't blow the house down. And we need
that's
someone.
A statement.
Well, you know what I mean. We need someone with a little more wolf in them, and who's going to scare the three little piggies.
Like Gladiators.
You know
what
I mean? Whereas I think actually Walcott is one of the three little piggies.
And to be honest, it wouldn't bother me in the slightest if Walcott did go. I hope he does. I think he's absolute rubbish.
But Van Persie, he's been injured for half his Arsenal career. Don't you think you want to back and think he owes us? Or do you think loyalty like that is lost in football?
Well, this is another
thing that's happened. Have we seen loyalty like that in any time in the last 5-10 years?
Well, I still believe, Mike.
What Wenger's tactic seems to be, with Henri, with Cesc, and now with Van Persie, oh God, we're going to lose him. Quick, make him captain. You know, that's just ridiculous. You don't, first of all, everyone knows, you make your striker captain. He doesn't want to be looking behind him to see what's happening. He doesn't want to have to worry about anything apart from putting the ball in the back of the net. You know, and that's what, by the way, that's what I said to Wrighty. I said, what I love about, but what we're missing is you, because you were a real nutter in front of goal. I said, my exact words.
And what did he say to that?
He loved it. He was like, he was loving it. I said, you were a real nutter. You didn't care. You didn't hesitate or think. Van Persie is a class act, but he thinks, he hesitates. He thinks, what shall I do with it now? Whereas Wright was like, get the ball in the back of the net. That's it. Boom. That's
what
we need.
Can I say, to stick up for Ian Wright as well, he gets a hell of a lot of stick on a lot of, not a lot of Arsenal websites, but the pro Wenger website, because he's always slacking off the way the clubs run and stuff like that. And he always kind of veiledly criticises Wenger all the time.
In his column in the
South. The AKBs hate him because of that. They call him a non-Arsenal fan and an anti-Arsenal
fan. He's Arsenal through and through.
Can I just say that 90% of Arsenal fans love his Ian Wright.
Oh, love
because
him.
Of his views.
Interesting.
I think this is the calls for a song. Yeah. Ian Wright, Ian Wright.
Well, let's move now from attack into defence.
Attack.
For another comment. Obviously, defence is word on everyone's lips. Will Wenger get a coach in, everything else? I guess the question is it, has it always been really bad, or when did it start to go bad, and what can we do to change it, really? I mean, when did the decline start? Let's start with you, Mike.
What, on defence?
Yeah. I mean, it's the
question, isn't it?
It is, yeah, it's huge. This issue's hot topic. Another one.
I think my concern during the summer was, like, if it didn't matter who we went and bought, they were going to come to a team that just doesn't put enough priority on defence. The fact, if you know, everyone goes back to the 2006 run to the Champions League final, where Martin Keown was doing whatever he was doing at the training ground with his coaching badges. And whatever he was doing, he was having an influence, because Philip Senderos was part of the Champions League record defence with Matthew Flamini at left back. And, you know, Senderos, bless him, is not a world-class player. And yet, he looked it in that run. So, my concern, I think it came up in the previous podcast, was that the players that we've got, we don't know how good they are, because we don't know what sort of... They're not getting the coaching that they need. They could all be bloody world beaters for all we know.
I agree, 100%.
Possibly not, but without the right training, we're not even giving them a chance.
No, I totally agree.
Good point.
Totally agree. I mean, to be honest, that Wenger team, that 2006 European Cup finalist team, they held the record. They held the record for the most number of clean sheets in Champions League history. And that team, as Mike said, had Flamini in it, Senderos in it, Campbell was there as well, and sometimes Abouye at right back, most of the time, if I remember rightly. Yeah. They were coached properly by a proper defensive coach. I mean, you asked when it all went wrong. Some say it went wrong during the 4-4 draw against Tottenham at the Emirates. So I personally think it got worse when we drew 4-4 against Newcastle. We haven't really recovered from that. But I really think if Wenger wants to get those players to sign new contracts, as well as spending the money in January, he needs to get a defensive coach in. Why not get Martin Keown back? Why not get Steve Bould promoted or whatever? But he won't do it, because if we start improving, the credit will go to that coach and not to him. And he's such an egomaniac, he can't live with that.
Do you agree with that, Basti?
I'd like to think he's not an egomaniac. I'd like to think that he'd put the club first. But the proof of the pudding seems to be a bit different. And I think, I'll tell you what, though. I think that he inherited all his success was as defensively was inherited, you know, that back four that he inherited to win stuff. Since then, he's not really come, well, apart from that 2006, which was, how much of that was fluke? Because that, you know, I don't know.
Jordan, keep him
with the fluke out.
All right, okay, but Keown was there at the time, wasn't he?
Could you see the coaching?
Well, you say only coaching, he was coaching, so yes, I think as I said in the last podcast. You know, we need someone like of an Adams, Bold, or Keown ilk, or even George Graham, someone who put the arms up and know that the offside trap was.
When
we
another lost, friend of yours,
we lost, well, another friend of mine. When we lost, when we lost against Mucker. Blackburn, right? Santos was the offside trap. Santos played everyone onside twice. That was their two legitimate goals, and we scored the other two for them. So, I mean, you know, the thing is, these are errors, and these are schoolboy errors. That's the problem. We are making schoolboy errors.
But right now, with our defence, I mean, everyone's saying that their confidence is at an all-time low. And Wenger's gone on about doing something about it. You know, we need to rebuild our confidence. Well, let's rebuild from the back. Let's switch back to 4-4-2. Go back to what was successful when he first came. Play two holding midfield players.
Yeah.
Give a bit of bloody protection, because two fullbacks we've got, and without Sanya for the next 3 months as well, is going to be worrying. They're attacking fullbacks. I mean, they're wingers turned defenders rather than the other way round. Just go back to get a few clean sheets. If we get nil-nil draws,
on the break as well, because hitting them on the break. I mean, we can always do that. We're quite capable of it. And another thing, a very simple thing we used to do. I seem to remember when the other team had a corner, we always had Ian Wright standing on the centre spot, right? And it was like, you know, go for the old fucking kick it up and let him chase after it. Now with Walcott and Van Persie and Gervinho and Chamet and all these, you know, why not? A few simple tactical changes here and there, you know, because what we're doing now, and we've been saying this for 3 or 4 seasons, isn't working. So,
well, one of the great differences between Ferguson and Wenger is, if that 2006 record-breaking defence had been coached by Keown for Man United, he would have said, wow, this is fantastic. You got a job for life there, Martin. Stay forever. I don't care whether you get the credit. I'm still the manager. You know, I'll be the manager of Manchester United when we go on and win titles. You're the defensive coach. Fine. Wenger doesn't think like that, to our huge loss.
Well, I think actually there might be a shout for Wenger, possibly be verging on the insane. There is one. There is one definition of insanity, which is called, which is repeating the same mistakes and expecting different results.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what we're doing. You know, it's like you know, jumping off a cliff and hurting yourself, and then going and doing it again. I mean, why are we doing it?
Yeah. Interesting point, Basti. Well, let's quickly move on to the last question, about the stadium. What makes people buy a season ticket and not actually turn up to games? As you know, there's swarms of empty seats in the stadium. Why do you think these people spend thousands of pounds on a season ticket and don't show up? Steve, without talking too much about...
I'll tell you why in one sentence.
Go on.
The fear of not getting a season ticket when Wenger goes. The reason I renewed mine this year, although I am going to go to every match, because for all my sins...
But some of your mates have given up their tickets.
Some of my mates have given up their ticket. Two of them. The guys I used to sit next to are no longer there. Yeah. I'm the only this year. Sad, but never mind. I renewed mine because I've got every hope that Wenger won't be there next year. And if I lose my season ticket and we suddenly get Guardiola as manager, I'll never get it back again. So I've renewed mine in the hope that we get a decent manager in the future. And I don't want to be scrabbling around for a season ticket when that happens. And I believe a lot of other fans have done the same thing. But rather unlike me, that goes for every match, they just think, oh, fuck it, I'll waste it for the year.
Mike, do you agree with that?
No, great. I mean, I sit with a group, and one of the people I sit with since we moved to the new ground was erstwhile Goon contributor Stuart Preston. Now, for various reasons, but not least the performance of the pitch and the fact that he's just getting so wound up with what was going on, he's given up his ticket this year. He's leased it out. Sorry, Stuart, I'm probably not going to say that. But you know, he doesn't want to lose that because he's got a young kid growing up. He's going to want to introduce them to Arsenal in years to come. But he said, I can't take watching this anymore. It's too frustrating. The only thing I can do is remove myself from it to take away that frustration. And I can agree with that to an extent. I can see exactly where he's coming from.
Funnily enough, I get frustrated watching this. I can't watch this on TV. I actually lose hair and get heart attacks.
You've still got a bit of hair, more than like, you know,
more than me.
Not as much as Mike, but more than me and Steve.
Well, yeah, so he's got a bald patch.
Yeah, but anyway, we're gone.
Yeah, but the point being that drives me mad. I stopped listening to it on the radio years ago. What I can do is, I've got my tactic now to not drive myself mad. I mean, it's got to this, is if I'm in the stadium, fine, because at least then I can scream and shout and do what the steward doesn't arrest me for calling the referee a wanker or something. But generally speaking, I can let it all out. But I cannot watch it with people in pubs and stuff. And what I generally do is I don't, if it's live on Sky and I'm not in the stadium, I will just try and avoid it until I just get a binary result that I can deal with and then just watch the highlights on Match of the Day. Because if I'm not actually at the stadium, it's just too frustrating to watch. And listening to someone like Clive Tilsley or these Sky commentators talking absolute shit, I mean, it just drives me up the wall. And if you're in a pub, you've got neutrals. I mean, I can't deal with it.
I have to say, I was at Old Trafford, and like people said it to me afterwards, going, oh God, I feel really sorry for you. And I'm going, trust me, it was a lot better being there than sitting at home watching it on the telly.
Yeah, you've got to, at least
the telly would not have survived.
Yeah. And you can just sit there and go, all right, that's it. You know, if you're in the stadium, so that's a reason to go. I think it's the real reason Steve goes, is because also, I think there is a little thing called loyalty. You've been a gooner all your life.
Yeah.
But I mean, a lot of people don't have that, and they're falling by the wayside. And, you know, I go to games when I can get a ticket now. And, you know, I gave up my season ticket. I can't remember. It was a few seasons ago.
Do you regret doing it, Basti?
No. No, I don't. I can't afford it financially, really, either. It's just much too expensive. I mean, when we all started going, you know, it was 60p to get in. You know, I mean, it's slightly different. It's like, you know, I mean, it's like bye-bye holiday, bye-bye anything, bye-bye, you know. Living in London is so expensive anyway. You know what? I mean, you can chuck another couple of grand on that.
Well, I'll tell you what, the best way to get Wenger out is, I won't renew in the summer, and the minute the season ticket deadline expires and I've not renewed, they'll sack Wenger.
Interesting, Steve. And then
until
that point, Bassett can carry on paying 20 quid now to get my
I've got him free to a couple of games. I mean, it's madness. That Shrewsbury Carling Cup game, some woman, I was at the back of the queue, I was going to buy a ticket for 20 quid. She said, "Oh, do you want a ticket?" I went, "Yeah, how much do you want?" She said, "No, you can just have it." I was like, "Great. Upper tier, three rows from the front. Thank you very much.
That is what we have come to. But thank you very much, panel. We're going to have another short break before we do our third and final one of the evening. But for those of you who just caught this one, if you want to email us again and to have, once again, the panel read out your emails, the address is goonapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks once again to our sponsors, goonashirts.com. Steve, what's your favourite Goonashirt t-shirt?
I've only come to see a Billy. I've got one.
And they're still available on the website, I think, for a knockdown price. Well, they're not knockdown price. They should be, but that's my opinion. Anyway, this is your host, Mark Collington, saying farewell, and thanks for listening.
La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company. Well,